tapes. I know you've seen them.
John sent me a tape, and it's fantastic.
Ah, so you felt that, too.
Well, it's incredible. Of course, I've known that he was working in this area from working with him, and I've known a little bit about some of the marvelous things he's doing with those chips he's using. And let me tell you, that is some fantastic feats of engineering he's done there. There's nothing else like that anywhere that I know of.
Well, once you have listened to the optophonic sound, you want to throw your stereo out the window, and certainly your mono thing out the window. And in fact, there's no reason to ever have mono again, because you can convert a mono signal to this optophonic signal, and you've got something totally new, totally delightful. And of course, in this business that I'm in, that always appeals to me, which is one of the uses of scalar technology. Now, this, of course, seems to be maybe a frivolous one, but sound has to do with communication and education. And the more that you can make sound more palatable and make it better, the better you can educate and the better you can share experience.
Well, Bill, you know, a lot of people ask, they say, how can you get something out of nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Because the nothing is full of energy. And we just, as a race of people, have not been able to tap this because we don't understand it too well. Now, we're working on this.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding out that there are spectrums with this technology that are very beneficial. One of those may pop up to be healing. Did anybody ever think that maybe you could go someday into a doctor's office and listen to some music, and all of a sudden you don't have that disease anymore? Because this technology makes possible certain resonances. And by using those resonances, the disease cannot exist. You pop it.
Well, you just left me, John. I love the idea.
Well,
I'm not sure whether the AMA would, but I do.
Well, the AMA is of no concern to me.
And me either.
You know, we could go into a long subject about this, but...
Let's don't.
Let's not. Let's just take just for a moment, and we'll all just open up our minds out there just for a moment, and let's just think what we're controlled by. We are all controlled by frequencies. We're very resonant. We're very adaptive to certain situations. Have you ever seen anybody play certain type of music, and all of a sudden the whole audience is just relaxed?
Mm-hmm.
There are people who do this.
On the other hand, whenever the kids come in at my house, they put on a certain type of music, and I get very agitated.
But the point is, Bill, that since we're so frequency-oriented, that it must be, the cures must be in scalar technology and certain resonances.
The reason I led you down this line of thought, and I didn't mean to be tongue-in-cheek along the way, is that certainly scalar interferometry goes far beyond giving you a whole new experience in listening to music or sound, you know, from your set. There is a whole new experience to be experienced by the people of this planet in the very way that they maintain their health,
right,
the very way that they stop the aging process, the very way that they are able to fend off any kind of virus or any problem, because you shouldn't have that if you're in resonance and if your frequencies are right. And with the scalar, we can get those things back the way they should be. Rather than using chemicals and knives, going to use a chip, children. And one of these days, and it's not too far away, hospitals are going to be places where they set bones and sew up wounds, and that's about it.
That's right, because the use of the technology has much more benefits for good than for bad.
Unfortunately, in this society that we have, and you can just look at it historically, Tom, I think you'll agree, when there have been great technological breakthroughs, the structures of government, the structures of our economics, say that the only way that you can get the necessary research to bring this technology online is to first make a weapon out of it. Then the government will get full behind it and bring it on. And then after the weapon is made, maybe we can save lives. which is a tribute to the great mentality of the human species.
Well, I think we ought to save all the lives, Bill.
Well, you're strange, John.
I must be.
Well, of course, we have a problem in the whole area in that ever since the time of Tesla, this technology has been rigorously suppressed in Western society. They've gone to a great deal of trouble to suppress it because it's been repeatedly discovered, at least parts of it have been, and just rather ruthlessly stamped out every time it has been. The real reason that it's been suppressed is exactly what John's talking about. You can cure diseases with it, just as Antoine Priori did with the Priori device in France, which was really a scalar electromagnetic device. It was a big monster because he didn't know the chip technology and so forth like John's using. But I foresee the kind of technology that John's talking about producing, for example, a real honest-to-God cure for cancer and leukemia. I don't think it would be that hard to do it. And I think John Medini is probably the very guy that could do it.
Well, I tell you one of the interesting things, and I can relate to this personally, and I've talked about this before, so I'm not letting anything out of school. And, John, I know you didn't want me to talk about it too much. But it was less than a year ago that my son sustained a injury to his knee that was more severe than the one that Pedro Guerrero is now experiencing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And we have lost Pedro for the Dodgers for most of this year, if not all of it. Within a month, my son was walking without any problem whatsoever.
That's right.
And John did that with whatever that was over there, John.
Well, these are the benefits of scalar...
Yeah, Tommy Lasorda, if you're listening, right, we'll take care of Pedro. But
these are the benefits, Bill, of scalar technology. You see, over here especially, we are not allowed to do anything that may help somebody without the gold seal on it. In other words, you have to have the gold seal by the money makers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that gold seal, of course, is going to cost a person...
bunch of money.
Well, his house, his credit cards, his car, everything, okay, all right? Everything you own, you go to the hospital and it's theirs. What do you have when you get out? You might have just a little bit more than when you went in.
Well, it gets back to that old story that we have told here quite often and quite eloquently, and certainly Tom Bearden is one of the best tellers of that story, how the world would have been a much better place had Nikola Tesla never met J.P. Morgan.
Then he was warned.
J.P. Morgan was not interested in the development of mankind. He was only interested in money.
Well, I think his key phrase, Bill, was one source of power. One, only one, anybody can milk our cow.
Yeah.
We're not going to have that. Fire him.
So he shut off free energy, and he shut off a whole new technology in sake of the god-awful dollar.
But the free energy, Bill, now is popping up.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
everywhere.
That we have two people that have done this.
Yes.
Have taken a book, and these are normal people.
What we're going to do, what John is talking about, we have talked about the free energy before and all of that technology. And during the course of the last week, we found two very skilled people that took the very basic information that John has published and we've talked about on the show. Tom, I think you're familiar with this.
Yeah.
We're going to call them just Roy and Bill. Ray and Bill, that's their first names. We'll talk to them for a second. And they have done it. And they are rather well-placed engineers. They know exactly what they're talking about, and they understand what John is talking about.
They get 20 gold stars for me.
20 gold stars. And we'll talk to them in just a few moments. Right now, you're in a conversation with John Bedini and with Tom Bearden. We're talking about the bright side of scalar electromagnetics. It is probably the great hope, the greatest hope that we have seen in a long time. I'm Bill Jenkins.
Some objection to it, yet presents an open mind, and as the name of your show is.
Yes.
And therefore, finally comes around once he sees the facts. I mean, the facts can't be denied. And the third, of course, is they would accept anything, you know, no matter what you tell them. So those kind aren't so good either. But there are three definite basic types.
Well, you know, you live in a rather advanced... I can't get into your background. You've asked for that an amenity. But a group, your peer group, are very advanced people. You're involved in some of our leading organizations here, where science is supposed to be what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you show them, here it is, and yet they're going to take question with you, even though they're looking at it, working, because it doesn't fit the mold of the book they have back in their office. Does that say too much for us, sir?
That's exactly what happens quite often.
Yeah, I'd like to point out here that the books that we have are only the ones that John and Tom and all mention every time that they're on your program.
Yes.
They always tell that they go to the Tesla Book Company, these are available. So we said, well, let's get them. And they're very inexpensive. They cost about the price of a magazine or something like that. They're not expensive to get. So we sent the Tesla bookstore. We got the books, and it looked impossible at first, but then so we said, well, let's have an open mind, and we wanted to try it.
Good for you.
All right, now.
And I was one of the ones that was skeptical, may I add.
But there were some things that were difficult for us. We didn't feel that we could build one of the special generators, so we said, well, now, why can't we really do the same thing with just the electronic logic? Now, let me say also that the level of electronics that we have is nothing very deep. It's things like you might read about in a popular electronics magazine. And the science that's in it is something that you might read in Scientific American. It's something that just any ordinary people can understand.
Can you wait just a second there, Ray?
Yeah.
I'm just an ordinary talk show host that's behind schedule with something very important.
Okay.
A commercial. And I'll be right back with you. We have Bill and Ray on the line talking to John Bedini and Tom Bearden. Bill and Ray are in the electronic industry. They know their electronics very well. They took these impossible ideas of our resident madman, John Bedini and Tom Bibb, and found out that they work. And it's a fascinating story. So you stay with me. I'll be right back on Talk Radio 79 KABC. Physicist with, we will say, a rather large corporation who should know better, that on their own time, they took John's book and Tom Bearden, who is also with us on the phone from Huntsville, Alabama, and started working with this impossible thing about scalar interferometry that John had been talking about and we had been talking about here on the air. And guys, Bill and Ray, you get 5 stars. Because on your own, you didn't call me, you didn't call John, you didn't call Tom. You did it, and you found out that, my goodness gracious, it works.
Yes, definitely. Ray is the one that eventually got the material. I think he listened to your show, and, well, Ray, you tell him what happened from there.
Well, on the show, you remember, Bill, you suggested that you tape it because you're going to probably want to hear it again. And so I did. I taped it, then I shared it with Bill. And it sounded impossible.
But you made the impossible come true.
But
now, what I'm going to do here,
yeah.
We've done it again. We've run up to the 11 o'clock hour. You guys have time to go get a cup of coffee. We want to hear this story totally and completely because we're going to take a break for news. But it's something I don't want anybody to miss. And turn on your tapes because you're going to learn a lot of new things in this next hour from John Bedini and Tom Bearden and Ray and Bill. On Open Mind, called scalar interferometry. And it takes many dimensions, from awesome weapons to healing, the likes of which you have never seen, to hearing, the likes of which you have never heard. And the men that are in the forefront of this particular science is in the studio. One of them is John C. Bedini. On the phone from Huntsville, Alabama, is Thomas E. Bearden. And also on the phone are two of our peers that live here in Los Angeles that heard us talk about this, read the material that John had published and Tom had published, went about in their own spare time, they work with one of our major corporations, and found out that it was true. I hated to pause in the middle of your story. We have Bill and Ray on the line. Ray, go ahead and continue.
Okay, well, in one of the experiments that John had run and was written in the paper that Ike and Yoder wrote up, where he took 4 partially discharged batteries, and with no other power input, he had the 4 batteries recharge themselves, while at the same time he was operating a 75-watt quartz light as a load, and they recharged themselves.
True.
So Bill and I said, well, why use 4 batteries? Why can't we have 1 battery recharge itself? And so using the really the
T-field generator system that we simulated by electronic logic circuits, we were able to do this. And we proved all the strange things that John had talked about. Now, everything works backwards. But that part of it is where Bill is really better qualified to explain that.
The whole world of electromagnetics seems to be upside down, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, you see, the interesting part about the whole thing is, as I read through the literature, which took me a couple of months, I guess, it's pretty complicated stuff, the very first thing that dawned on me, that grabbed me, really, was Tom Bearden's explanation of a zero vector.
All right, now Tom's on the line, Tom. Are you still there, right?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you got Tom on the line.
Yeah, your explanation of a zero vector, once it sunk in, once I understood what you meant by scalar, what everybody's talking about by scalar, I was astounded at the absolute incredible possibilities of such a thing.
It turns your electromagnetics into gravity.
Yes, it's absolutely astounding, the implications that's involved here. Now, so at any rate, I also moved on then to John Bendini's G-field generator there and took a look at exactly what he was doing with that, or tried to understand exactly what he was doing with that anyway. And that took a while.
You think that took a while? I took John with me down to Town Hall, you know, our prestigious group. What's about a little over a year ago?
That was the broadcast that started it.
And we demonstrated that down at Town Hall, and we were there till 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon because there were people from the aerospace industry and everybody there that just didn't believe it. Now, I think you had 10 100-watt lights.
Yes, I did.
Plus a 2,500-watt
heater. I had a 600-watt quartz heater and 10 100-watt light bulbs, and I lit all that up with a 500-watt motor. That's all the motor could draw, because it was not a capacitive run motor.
I want you to know, guys, that there were people under the table looking for hidden
Well, here's the whole thing that the people are going to have to understand is that G-field generator represents one thing. It represents a zero. It's when the iron comes into the magnetic fields, and instead of cutting them, it is just charged. And it becomes neutral to the magnetic field. And when it comes out of the magnetic field, it comes out with one hell of a whomp. And that's the energy that we want to use. That's the energy we want to burn, because the opposite effect happens then. Instead of putting drag on a motor like a normal generator would, it will speed up the motor, because the motor has no load to drive. And the harder the load is to drive, the faster the motor wants to spin. Well, that's backwards to everything that we know.
Does that pretty well go along with what you and Bill, that you and Ray found out in your work?
Very much so, yes.
Exactly, yeah.
As I understood that, I thought, well, now how can we... You see, one of the problems that we had as a group is that we didn't have a machinist or a shop or lathes around that we could manufacture or try to duplicate this kind of a system. And being more involved in electronics than anything else, we said, well, can we do it electronically with only one battery? Apparently it has been done electronically before, but never quite that way. So
you didn't go solid state on us, did you?
Essentially we did, yes. I'm afraid we did.
You get 12 stars. 25 stars.
Well, it wasn't an easy chore. Once we figured out, after we went through a couple of failures there, once we figured out exactly how to design a rather unique type of a voltage doubler, we were doing just fine with a plug. See, we had a plug in the wall that would run our solid states, and our solid states would control the actual charging of the battery and the lighting of the bulbs and whatever. But, of course, that didn't make for a very good demonstration with this thing plugged in the wall, so we decided to make the whole thing self-contained.
Bless your heart.
Well, that's where we ran into trouble, because IC chips do not like scalar. Just don't like it.
There's no
matter of fact, I think I had to dig out of that.
Are those your CMOS chips?
Well, we were using TTL.
Uh-huh. They don't like scalar.
None of it likes scalar. As a matter of fact, I think I had to dig an LED out of the ceiling once. It was It was rather difficult.
I had a few myself.
Yes. However, we did finally figure out a way to do it, to isolate the integrated circuitry from the scalar effect. And then it became a rather impressive little device, sitting there with nothing but this battery on it, battery bubbling away, charging just fine.
You'll blow up that battery if you're not careful.
If you're not careful. And one of the interesting things that we had is a light bulb blowing. Now,
yes.
I give you a little interesting piece of information here for the technocrats that may be listening.
There are a few, I think.
I'm sure. Let's see, we had a 4 ampere hour moped motorcycle battery.
Yeah, the smallest lead acid battery that we could get.
Yeah, the reason for that being is because any effect that we would obtain would probably be over quickly. We wouldn't have to wait around all day for something to happen. The motorcycle battery only had 4 ampere hours, and if it was going to die, it wouldn't take all day to do it. This was the theory behind it, anyway.
They sure will die quick when the thing won't start and you keep trying to kick it over there. Yeah.
That's true. That's true. And let's see. Then we had a four amp light bulb at 12 volts. That's about 48 watts. And we ran the whole thing for 11 hours. Now
11 hours on a 4 hour battery.
Yeah. Well, it didn't stop then. We turned it off.
No, it was
you just got tired of that.
No, it was a 1 hour battery.
Oh, it was a 1 hour battery.
Right.
You realize that would have gone on, you know, until something just broke.
Affirmative. It would have. It's a total of 44 ampere hours out of a 4 ampere hour battery and when we shut it off. And then, of course, we thought, well, this thing seems to be working pretty well. Let's charge the battery up conventionally all the way to the top with a conventional charger and see how long and start this whole thing over and make some real notes, some real scientific records on the thing.
We need some data, you know, to draw some conclusions from.
Right.
So it took us. A very interesting thing occurred. The battery, as far as the hydrometer was concerned, it was a small lead acid, and it seemed to tell us that it was discharging. However, the light bulb would still light if you put it right across the battery.
Amazing.
A very interesting thing. It took 16 hours at 2 amps to bring the thing back up to what the hydrometer called 10% charge. Nevertheless,
it's running away.
Nevertheless, it runs just beautifully. It's just unbelievable, the thing. Now, one of the demonstrations I gave to some of the technical people in the area was an amp meter in series with the light bulb, digital type,
mm-hmm.
a digital voltmeter across the light bulb, and a Tektronix oscilloscope across the light bulb.
You're getting sophisticated, I'm saying.
A little bit. Now, when the thing was detuned, when it wasn't properly operating, the light bulb glowed very, very dimly, and we saw about 2 or 3 volts on a light bulb and about 46, 47 milliamps of current. And the oscilloscope showed us the waveform going to the light bulb at the same voltage level as the digital meter did. And then we bring the thing up tune it to the battery's resonant frequency or subharmonic of the battery's resonant frequency for the people out there that like those things. And when this occurred, the bulb glowed full bright, the voltage went to zero, the scope straight line, and the amperage went to zero.
But the bulb kept on burning.
Right. Very brightly, yes.
That's it, guys.
That's exactly
the way it does it.
Now, where was the energy coming from, Bill and Ray?
Well, now that can get complicated. Mr. Bendini certainly knows, and Tom certainly knows, and I think I know.
Do you mind if I bring somebody else in on the conversation?
One question here, Bill.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it is absolute proof that we have to have something in front of our eyes to believe it, right?
Oh, there is absolute proof of that.
But
I couldn't tell.
In reality, all our instrumentation shows zero, and the light glows.
Right. That's affirmative. The instrumentation is pretty much a linear stuff, and the scalar being nonlinear isn't picked up by the instrumentation.
It goes right through it.
So we've got a lot of work to do on detecting scalar, don't we?
Right.
Very much so.
Well, I have on the line another gentleman who is with another one of our rather large organizations who I think may have something to add to this. Do you want to listen to another independent investigator like yourself?
Sure.
All right. We'll bring him home in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and we're talking to John Bedini, who's given us free energy, who's given us a whole new way to listen to music, who's given us a whole new way to stay healthy. Tom Bearden is with us, who is working very, very closely with John. He's down in Huntsville, Alabama. We have Bill and Ray, and we'll bring Ron on right after this. Hello, Ron.
Oh, hello, Bill.
You've been listening to all of this?
I sure have, all but the first 20 minutes, and I can blame it on my two friends. I got a bone to pick with them.
All right, you're right.
John and Tom, since we're giving out stars tonight, I think you've got to take two away from these two guys.
Uh-oh, what'd they do now?
They didn't notify me they were going to be on the open line tonight.
Oh.
Can you believe that? Ron, I thought I did.
You have 40 stars, Ron.
Okay, John.
All right, Ron. I don't know whether you want to mention who you're with, but I know that you have, although you and I haven't had a chance to meet yet, that you have been deeply involved in the work of John and Tom, but you're certainly highly qualified to make it a judgment, and you've been working with it. What is your estimation of it all?
Well, I'd like to throw, since the two gentlemen on there last mentioned that...
They're still with us.
Things don't always work the way they're supposed to. They left out one little item that I was discussing with John and Tom a short time ago. Certain types of electrolytic capacitors do not like scalar waves either. They actually explode in just a few seconds of time. And this is not due to overvoltage, overcurrent, or anything else. The chemistry in the electrolyte of certain types of capacitors that are normally used in normal electronic circuits just completely refuse to function in the normal manner when a scalar signal is present. I think John can confirm that, and I know Tom is very much aware of this.
Have you found that out, Bill and Ray?
Well, we haven't experienced that yet.
It goes right through a capacitor.
But there are certain times it will blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the highest grade tantalums are the worst.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost dangerous because a person could get hurt. It only takes a few seconds, and when they do explode, they explode in a fashion that is not normal to any electrical type explosion, such as anyone knowing the result of a capacitor exploding or blowing up due to overvoltage or whatever the case may be. There's usually a string of tin foil dielectric stuff that spreads itself all out all around you when this happens. When there's a scalar potential involved and a capacitor explodes, everything internally within that capacitor, virtually every atom, ignites simultaneously. The end result is that you find there's just fragmentations of dust particles.
You have a little mushroom cloud, right?
Exactly, and it's stuck on everything in the immediate area.
Well, as you know, Ron, if you've been with us for a while, we took a little time in the beginning to talk about some of the awesome side of this science. And, of course, you're looking at it in a very little micro sense with a capacitor blowing up, but you can blow up a great deal more than that. But like any new technology, there is a good side of it, too. And what is thrilling to me is to see people like yourself and Bill and Ray to on their own. Because the government isn't going to do it. You know, they don't know anything about it at MIT or UCLA, and so therefore it doesn't exist. That the genius of the American people are starting to go to work on this new technology, and we're beginning to see this happen all around the world, which is the plea that John has made and that Tom has made for lo these many years here on this radio program. I really commend all of you. I'd like for you to stay on the line and talk to our listeners. They may have just a bunch of questions. You've got five guys to talk to who have found themselves knee-deep in scalar interferometry and wonders that this science can bring, unless any of you have anything to add before we do that.
Bill, could I mention something about the frustrations? I think her name was Joanne that was on earlier.
Yes.
Tell her she has a lot of company.
Yes.
My wife, for example, says, why can't we do anything? Why does not the government understand? And we went through this even last night. She had read part of a manuscript that Tom had presented, and it really kind of stirred her up in a way. I just want to let Joanne know she's not the only one. There's many other women that know what's going down that haven't made trips to the Ukraine, and they feel the same way that she does. So she's not a lonely person out there in any way.
I have found in conversations with Joanne, although she never did identify herself to me, she would call up and chew me out pretty good from time to time on the news work I was doing or whatever. And she was always on target. And I think she did articulate a feeling that we all feel about... what? The politics of science. And how economics seems to run it. And science and the betterment of mankind seems to be way off in the background someplace.
Yes,
how
I...
very, very sad that is.
Yes, I agree 1,000%.
But... okay. We'll go to our callers in just a second. We're speaking with Tom Bearden and John Bedini. John, here in the studio with us, we have Bill and Ray, who have taken this science and in their own way, and they're with one of our larger corporations, have shown that it works. And we also have Ron on the line, who is within a very large corporation, too, who's working very closely with it. And Ron, it works, right?
Absolutely.
Do you know
Absolutely.
Where that energy comes from?
Well,
no.
Yes and no.
Yes, you got some theories. Right?
Well, we know and we don't know. You give me a trick question. You ought to shoot that one over to Tom.
I'll shoot a little bit at you in a few minutes, Ron.
Okay.
About
Tom.
Where I think it's coming from.
All right.
All right, John.
So, to get in on this, we have a lot of people from a lot of sections of science that are dealing with it, and they can answer your questions. You know, I can give you words. These guys have got their fingers in that pie all of the time. I'll be right back in a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins on KABC Talk Radio 7. And although they are now beginning to listen, ignored by our great citadels of learning and great corporations, they won't have anything to do with it. But yet, in it is the promise of a world that is unbelievable. So what is happening here is that individuals, the Americans, to heck with all of the other institutions, the Americans themselves are getting out there, digging out the new information, digging out the new experiments, digging out the new science. And I guess one of these days, the people are going to say to the government, do something about this, rather than all of the foolish things that they deal with for the most of the time. I'm proud of all of you. Are you ready to take some callers, gentlemen? Okay?
Okay.
Here we go. I believe we have Joe on the line. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Good evening. I'm absolutely delighted as a metaphysician, full-time professional, that new science is finally catching up and proving old metaphysics.
It doesn't it?
Yeah. To talk about zero, that's something that the Kabbalists and metaphysicians have been talking about for ages, that God, spirit, or whatever you want to call it, is everything, all, one, and nothing. The computers operate on one and zero. Zero is very comprehensible to me. That's not why I originally called. I originally called because of a confusion between my metaphysics and my 60s paranoia regarding what happened in Russia. I have felt for a couple of years, that the Russians misusing, being spiritless and purely materialistic, misusing those powers would have some kind of negative feedback. And yet, what's happened lately, four of our NASA flights have blown up in a row. And I'm wondering if there is a secret war going on. Like, we can do this to you, and we can, if you do this, then we'll do this to you. I'm wondering if it's metaphysical feedback and negative use, or if there is some kind of a war going on.
Very perceptive of you. I go for the latter.
Yeah, I do too. I'm sure that there has been a lot of mismanagement at NASA, and probably in Russia too. And there's some bureaucrats who couldn't fess up to their inability to deal with the explosion in Russia, taking into consideration the mentality that we're dealing with. But it's quite possible that one of our lasers could have done that also. Yeah, Russia has been pouring lots of money into what we do here against the law in many areas, which is psychic development and
don't
psychic
exploration. Don't get Joanne upset. Call them the Soviets, then.
All right. Yeah. Right. The Soviets and working in new ways of healing people, working with crystals, we don't get any support here at all. I mean, I know that what I'm doing now is legal in the state of California, according to Supreme Court decision of last August. But there are still forces, like in Long Beach, which are against us and fighting us.
Talking about the ordinance down there where they want to ban anything that...
Well, they want to put us in the red light district, along where I guess their own politicians belong. you know, are making us pay huge sums of money in order to practice what is really free speech, according to the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, we're talking about the psychics and all of those things that work down in Long Beach.
That's a whole other subject, but I really feel that Russia's misuse of what may eventually be purely science, what we metaphysicians have kept alive for many years, quietly, secretly.
Well, now we're...